All right, because we began the show talking about the open letter from the residents of Chicago, condo association folks, homeowners, and 38,000 residents total. It was a letter to Mayor Lightfoot talking about how they feel as if this is no way to live. It's not a way to work. They don't feel safe. And it's not the Chicago we know. We need your support, Mayor. We need your backing. We need to fulfill your duty of ensuring the well-being of all Chicago residents. And it's a pretty dire warning, the way the letter was written, saying that people will leave and the tax base will go away, and that is in the process of happening. There's another letter out there, too, and it has a very different, makes a very different point. This point and this letter is from elected officials condemning Mayor Lightfoot and Superintendent Brown for putting profits before people. It is signed by Alderwoman Rosanna Rodriguez Sanchez, and we'll talk with her in just a moment. She's joining the program. Alderman Carlos Ramirez Rosa, Byron C. Joe Lopez, La Spada Alderman, Cook County Commissioner Brandon Johnson, Cook County Commissioner Alma Anaya, and State Rep. Lakeisha Collins. Also, one other state rep, Delia Ramirez. Now, they're saying Chicagoans deserve peace, we deserve safety, and need to feel protected. But they question the way the city resources are being used to defend high-end stores on the Mag Mile when there are other things happening. Let's talk to Alderwoman Rosanna Ramirez Sanchez. How are you? How you doing, Alderwoman?
Rodriguez. I'm Rosanna Rodriguez Sanchez, but Carlos is Ramirez, and we work a lot together, so that's good.
So sorry I said it that way. I'm reading all these names, and I'm like, I know I'm going to screw it up, and then I did. I'm so sorry.
Don't worry about
We're
it.
We're off
Don't
to
worry
a good start.
Just making it clear.
And so I want to ask you about this, because your letter kind of went out there when there was so much news being made, and yet to see representatives like you say, wait a minute, we're not cool with the way things are happening here either. I just want to have you explain to me why you decided to do this.
Well, it seems to me that whenever we have issues like this, there is only one response, right? Like, we're going to be tough on crime. We're going to bring more police. We're going to make sure that people know that they will be prosecuted. We are committed to jailing people. And I think that we have been using that response, and it has proven to fail. What happens when you lock a bunch of people up and then they are occupying all of this space in prisons, where they are definitely treated very poorly, right? We take people away from their communities, away from their families, and there is nothing actually to improve the lives of anybody at all. Nobody is getting any benefit from this, right? And we have been saying that the important thing is to make sure that we're investing in those communities, investing in jobs, investing in housing, investing in education, investing in the things that actually make people safe. Nobody that has a good standards of living is going to go smash windows. Yeah. Nobody that doesn't actually need, you know, that is going to go put themselves at risk to do that. And I think it is very important that we start hearing how dire the situation is right now. I do want to say, I one of the communities that I represent is Albany Park. We have a pantry on Montrose Avenue, and that pantry opens every Wednesday and Friday. And every Wednesday and Friday before noon, when the pantry opens, we have lines of people that go around the corner, and there is a line for the whole time from 12 to 5 of people waiting to get things that are as basic as diapers and formula for their babies. This is where we are at right now. We are facing the threat of mass evictions in our communities. Already, so many black people in our communities have been displaced and have had to leave Chicago. So the threat of leaving the city by people who are wealthy, by people who have been enjoying a particular standard of living, it just leaves me feeling like, when are we going to actually care about the people who are the most marginalized and abused in this society, right? And I thought that Mayor Lightfoot came into office with that agenda, right? An agenda of equity, an agenda of making the lives of the most marginalized better, but that's not what I'm seeing right now.
So your colleagues in city council, some of them believe that there should be consequences for the looters and the folks that are doing what they're doing. Do you think there should be any consequences for that? Where do you stand? I mean, how do you answer?
I think that particular question is funny, in my opinion, because it gets elected officials to try to either go the way of like, all the law, you know, needs to be applied and people need to be jailed. But then we're playing into the same narrative, right? That we need to be punishing the people who are suffering the most. right? And I think that dehumanizes a lot of people, a lot of people who are desperate, a lot of people who are acting out of that same desperation because we are not meeting their needs, because we have been engaging in all of this disinvestment for so long. And until we address that, this is not going to stop. We're going to continue to see this. We are living right now. It is incredible to me, actually, that when all of this happens and then people who are wealthy feel threatened, there is all of this issue. But people in the south and west side of Chicago have been suffering for so long, and they live with this violence, and they have to put up with it. There's no letter. Right?
Right. No, I get that piece of it. There's a privilege that comes with that ability to live that way and not be exposed to it because it's been confined to
certain areas. The South and West Side don't have that privilege and has never had it. And I am not going to answer that question because I feel like it ends up dehumanizing the people who are the most disenfranchised in this society. I think that the answer to all of the questions is let's invest in communities. And our proposal so far is being, and we have been trying to have this conversation in Chicago now for a while, which is let's defund the police. Let's take some of those $1.8 billion that we are investing in policing all of these communities, and instead of threatening with punishment, let's invest in jobs. Let's invest in better standard of living for all of these people. And that is the route that we need to go, and that conversation is not even entertained right now.
So, well, I hope it is. I hope it is, because I do. Alderwoman, I do hear the mayor talking about it. I just think she may not have the same path or the same solutions as you suggest, but I think there is some common ground there, and I absolutely think it feels as if it's in her heart, and it feels it's in her words that she is about equity, and I think she wants to get there.
I know, I'm talking about the conversation about defunding police. That conversation is not being entertained
now. Let's get to that because we'll have that conversation. But I want to get back to this other piece where you're talking about the long term solution piece, which is absolutely the right answer. There's no doubt. I think it's alarming to me as a graduate of the Chicago Public Schools when I hear that. Many people who are a fundamental piece of our tax base, and you can laugh and say, well, yeah, you know, if they're finally understanding what it's like to live with crime, and I get that, but if they leave and they can choose to leave, that we don't fund our schools to the degree, and all of the programs you're talking about that fund equity in our city don't get the funding they deserve. They don't. You can have the conversation as long as you want right now, and we can come up with a perfect picture for equity, and we better come up with some solutions. I am with you there.
Mm-hmm.
However,
yep.
If you don't have the funds to do that, and people do leave, and you start to become like a Detroit, aren't you concerned about that, too? I mean, shouldn't we listen to them, too?
Well, we're talking about that. That is exactly what the conversation about defunding police is. There are things that we could be doing right now in order to ensure the safety of our community. Right now, the mayor decided to invest $7.5 million in violence interruption, right? That happened. And she started with this great initiative that is going to bring outreach workers into communities and $7.5 million, not even 2 days of policing in Chicago. We could do this if we wanted to and if we had the political will to do it. We have continued to put money into an institution that clearly has a lot of problems. We haven't even been able to make a lot of advance in working towards police accountability and a consent decree that we missed 70% of the deadlines that needed to be met. I think that we need to change the route that we're going. We need to have the conversation about divesting the money that we are investing in trying to lock people up and get them into a system that is clearly racist. And I think that at this point, nobody can disagree with that.
That's probably true. I think there are racist elements to our system.
No, I'm pretty sure it's true.
Yeah. I agree. You know, look, I agree with you there. I spent a lot of my career as a journalist trying to expose some of that stuff, and I found wrongful convictions and wrongful accusations. Yeah. And I found police abuse and problems, and I tried to expose as much of that as I could in my career.
So why are we trying to use that same system?
Here's the problem I have, because I'm not sure you can dismantle the entire thing and say, okay, because what you guys propose here is taking the money spent on police for the year and just giving each Chicagoan $2,500, and assuming that carries you to what? That's, you say, take the $2 billion, is it? I can't even read that many zeros. $2 billion on police, right? Okay. And now let's just give everybody $2,500 and then we're good. And that helps. And then there's no police in the city and we all have $2,500.
of the suggestions, but we have been talking about a lot of different things, right? Like that's a bigger conversation. Right now, for example, we have the police at a national level responding to every sort of emergency that anybody has, from a noise complaint to, you know, a domestic disturbance. Everything is being handled by police, and we're paying for that. And it's very expensive to do that, not only because it costs a lot of money, but also because of what happens when you send a person that is armed into a situation that doesn't need a gun, right?
But how I understand that. I agree with that. I think we need more mental health. I absolutely think that. When we got in our system...
No, we need crisis response is what we
crisis
need.
Response.
We need crisis
okay.
response.
Okay, but okay,
that,
hold on, stop for a second. I get that, but we've had two police officers shot just responding to domestic violence in the last couple of weeks. One of them was wearing a vest. Thank God he was, because he might be dead. It was in the chest. So I get this, that there are certain things that might warrant that, you don't need a police officer to go to, maybe traffic scenarios for sure, when it's clearly a mental health situation. But if you take, I've heard you also say that family matters should be handled by these crisis intervention folks who don't have a gun and aren't wearing a vest. And we've saw two police officers shot in the last few weeks, because those can be some of the most dangerous things
ever.
You can't
make a blanket statement about that, though, and there's a huge list of things that the police doesn't need to address.
Give it to us. Let's hear it.
For example, in LA, for example, 8% of the calls to police are actually for violent incidents. If you go to nationally, 90% of the calls, or over 90% of the calls, and this is statistic, and I can send you this information so you can read it, are for nonviolent incidents. In Eugene, Oregon, there is a program called Cahoots, for example. They take 20% of police calls. And only in 1% of the cases of the calls, they have had to call backup. Only 1% of the cases. They take 20% of police calls budget that they have. I think they spend $2.4 million in tending to about 250,000 people a year.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that's a program a lot of people are looking at right now, in terms, and even Chicago.
Absolutely. In Colorado, in Denver, Colorado, they're doing the same thing. They send out vans that respond to emergencies with a social worker and an EMT, and they take care of a lot of things, from people who are behaving erratically, noise complaints, situations when you have to de-escalate and mediate between neighbors, and that's a lot of what the Chicago police is called for.
So you're saying, let me just kind of understand it, because I am trying to understand. So if someone calls 911 and says, you know, my neighbor's yelling at me, don't send police. If someone's calling about what kinds of things, you know, you're just saying that it seems like they're conflicts that are minor, that police shouldn't be sent. But if they elevate to a certain level, do you need a police officer? When do you determine that it goes to the level where you might need a police officer? Or are you suggesting you don't?
There is a system that needs to be put in place for that. I am not an expert, and I cannot tell you, I'm going to sit here, I'm going to listen to each one of these calls, but that already happens, right? Because you need to know what is happening in order to know who you're sending there. So I think that's a bigger conversation, but that is something that Eugene, Oregon was able to figure out. And they send 20% of their calls are seen by a mental health expert and an EMT. Denver is doing the same thing. Denver has a program, a similar program than Cahoots, that was actually modeled after what Cahoots is doing. So this conversation is being had in a lot of different places, but we are not having this conversation at this moment.
I thought we were, though. I really did. I thought we were. I thought Chicago is looking at some more of supplementing the police force with mental health and these crisis intervention folks and interrupters.
Yeah, not in this way at all. This is not what Chicago is talking about right now. But that is one example. For example, we closed the mental health clinics, right? Like six of them. And then after the mental health clinics were closed, you had police addressing those issues, right? At the mental health clinics, you didn't have anybody with a gun, right? Mm-hmm. People would see their mental health care provider. They couldn't access them anymore.
Right.
So why aren't we investing in reopening the mental health clinics, right, and attaching, for example, a mobile unit to those mental health clinics? We're not even talking about that. We had a fight last budget trying to get the mayor to commit to reopening the mental health clinics. That did not happen. That money did not come through, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think when we talk about these commitments and when we talk about what we want in terms of equity, we need to look at what are the real needs of the people. And if you want a society that is that is less violent, if you want a society, you have to guarantee the safety of everybody, and that means that you need to take care of the most needed and the people who have been more marginalized and oppressed.
All right, Alderwoman, I appreciate your thoughts. And I would like, would you please get me that information? Because I'd like
I
to continue this conversation. And I hope you give us some more time to understand your perspective. And I appreciate your time today. And I promise you your name right every time you call from now on. 33rd Ward, Alderman, Alderwoman Rosanna Rodriguez Sanchez. There, did I do okay?
You said it beautifully. Thank you so much.
Thanks for the call. You too. Have a good afternoon. Oh, my gosh. Dan, you have been waiting on for a long time. Thank you for doing that. And go ahead, jump in here. What's on your mind?
Hi.
Hi.
I was listening to the young lady talk, and I did agree with a lot of what she said. What I did not understand is I believe they hit a Ronald McDonald House.
Yes.
And, yes, I can't wrap my head around saying that, you know, people are doing it for food. I understand people are angry. A lot of people are angry. I grew up in Calumet City, Illinois, and it was a mixed town, but everybody was just angry, just so angry. And I just can't wrap my head around. I mean, I understand looting a McDonald's to get cheeseburgers, doing something to feed your kids, but I mean, it's getting to the point where, I mean, people are making excuses for people burning down other people's buildings. You don't even know who owns those buildings.
Well, that's a great point.
They could be an immigrant. There's a lot of immigrants that I see. Yes. No, I don't mean immigrants. I mean immigrants that have shops that got burnt down.
Or just small mom and pops who can't afford to rebuild, and it's their life then that's ruined.
Exactly. That's just what I understand the anger. I totally do. As a white boy growing up in Cal City, even being white in Cal City, I do understand how it could be, how you get a lot of angry police and this and that. I was just confused on how somebody could actually justify burning somebody else's building down and saying, well, they're mad because of this. I can't wrap my head around it, and I don't think
a
lot of people should.
It is a hard thing, and I agree with you. Thank you for the call, Dan. You know, there's a story in the Tribune about an Indian immigrant, to speak to your point, and how this is the second time he's looted, and that his family was helping him pick up the pieces, and he doesn't know what he's going to build. He had a convenience store that was totally shattered and looted twice, and what's there for him ahead? You know, he's sort of, you know, trying to do what he can to get by. And you also even, I mean, I know everyone says, well, the top stores like Gucci and that, they've got insurance, but how long before they say, you know what, we're just going to be in Palm Springs and, you know, we'll be in Naples and we'll be in Paris and London, but we're going to skip Mag Mile. We're not going to be there, and you don't get our tax dollars anymore. There are consequences there, too. And again, as a CPS graduate, I would like to see our property taxes stay here, and I would not like to see them increase anymore either, because I feel like you've set up a situation where people no longer want to choose your city or come here and do business. That's bad for all of us. It's bad for the kids coming up. That is bad for every single citizen here. Tina, let's hear from you. You live in the ward, 33rd Ward, is that right?
Actually, I live in 35, which is right next to 33.
Got it. Okay.
And Lopez Rosa is also a person who wants to defund the police. And the thing is that my son is half Hispanic. I was poor as a single mother. My son studied and everything, and there were more grants and things and scholarships that were available to him because he had the Hispanic last name. And being a single mother and being there and living, you know, Wrigleyville in the late 60s, early 70s was a gang-ridden neighborhood. And you had to be careful, you know. And also, you know, like where I live now, there was a time where there was a man and a woman having a fight, and she was all full of blood and things like that. This was a month or two ago, and he was a gangbanger beating up this other woman. It didn't stop. We tried to interfere. It didn't stop until the police came. You have to have police and law and order. And what you were saying about the tax base, this is what pays for all the programs.
Yeah.
You know, you can't have things just constantly going out.
Yeah, I mean,
you know?
I agree with her that you can't be just locking up black and brown people or poor people because they can't afford to bond out on low-level nonviolent crimes. And also, for far too long, there's been a system where people of certain colors have been routed into a system and not treated the same way. There's no doubt about that. But now when you have somebody who commits a felony with a weapon in a community and then is back out over and over again, we shouldn't act surprised that they might do violence again. And that is they're a threat to their community at that point. And that's not the long-term solution. She's absolutely right about that. Thank you for the call. I want to try to get one more in here. Vince, thank you.
And,
Vince, let's go to you. I just have a few seconds here, but I'd love to hear what you, what's on your mind.
I was listening to the politician talking about defunding the police. And my question to her would be, I wish she could answer this question. So if she's correct about certain amount of phone calls should be taken by social workers and healthcare people and officials, well, where is that money going to come from? If it costs a certain amount of money to have a police officer go out, where is the money going to come from to send the social worker?
Let me answer that quickly. Vince, let me answer that quickly because I think, first of all, we're going to have her on again, and so we'll ask, but I think what she's saying is it's less money when you have those types of people respond. She's pointing out the instance on the West Coast where they're doing it. It's cheaper than police if you can adequately get them to fill that gap. Peter Garza, I want to hear from you. Honestly, just seconds. I just saw you on the line. Go ahead. What are you thinking?
Hi, how are you?
Good. I like hearing from you. I have so few seconds, but I do want to hear what you're
saying. Okay, well, just very quickly, the fundamental right that if you do something wrong, you have no consequences. The same thing, if you do something right, you should receive good consequences. You know, I can't understand the basic element of when you do something wrong, you know, you're going to have to pay the price. And this leftist alderman here, it's so far left, it's unbelievable, but, you know, this is what's going on here. The other thing is this. You send a police officer, the most dangerous call for a police officer is domestic violence. It's not just sending a social worker. Once you get out of that car, you have to look at your environment. How many people are hanging out? And domestic calls go from good to bad immediately. And the first time one of those social workers gets killed, their family is going to sue for not having a proper protection or training for those social workers. This is just outrageous as far as I'm concerned.
Peter, will you call in again as well? Because I'm going to try to get the alderwoman on again, if not tomorrow, next week, and discuss it again, because I know you are well-versed in criminal justice issues and always like hearing from you. That's Peter Garza. It's